Some of us don't actually particularly enjoy a trip to the dentist. Sorry, Nick. But if you lived a few hundred years ago, it could be a lot worse. I paid a visit to the British Dental Association Museum in London, where curator Rachel Bairstow took me through the horrible history of dentistry.
The dentist didn't come about until about 1728. Before then, anybody could give you advice about your teeth or take your teeth out if that was necessary. Perhaps you would go and see the blacksmith if you were in a poor rural community to have your teeth out. Perhaps you would consult the barber surgeon who would also cut your beard as well as extract your teeth.
Well, I saw a postcard here at the museum earlier that had a jester sort of surrounded by a crowd and some poor man waiting to have his tooth pulled out. Was it quite, I guess, a form of entertainment almost?
Well, I think it could be. Certainly there wasn't a dentist, if you like. There'd be this travelling tooth drawer who would come into town, drum up trade. He's looking for somebody who's had toothache and he's going to erect this stage in the centre of town and he's going to whip up the crowd. They're all excited and he's going to get this tooth out and he's going to wave it around and perhaps he's going to pull a maggot out of his pocket and say, this is what's been causing your toothache, because, you know, it was thought that a toothworm living in the tooth was the reason for tooth decay. It would be this great marketplace spectacle.
Think of it as ye old Netflix of the 1720s. This entertaining extraction was certainly a last resort for the patient in question. But what do you expect from an era where oral hygiene wasn't a thing? And it wasn't just the poorer communities that were suffering with extreme tooth decay. Let's fast forward a few decades where the wealthy were eating more and more sugar.
Well, once you'd had your teeth extracted, perhaps you'd like to buy somebody else's teeth. So the practice of transplanting teeth in the 1780s was quite a fashion, and rich people would buy the teeth of poor people who were willing to sell them for their money and literally planted from one mouth to the other. It didn't work, as you might expect, but nonetheless, it's been immortalised in a Thomas Rowlandson cartoon from 1787, so it's a great record of that procedure. But if transplanting didn't work, the next thing that you would probably try is buying an ivory denture. So this is a hippopotamus or walrus ivory denture, beautifully carved, great skill involved in this, but there was no real accurate way of measuring the mouth. So it was pretty much one size fits all.
Rachel showed me a pair of these ivory dentures. The gums were carved from white ivory, and whilst replacement teeth were also traditionally made from ivory, they didn't always look natural. And so people started pinching teeth from dead soldiers on battlefields or took them from dug-up corpses, a lucrative business. But, of course, contamination was a big problem.
No, they wouldn't last. You're putting them into what, in effect, is a pretty putrid mouth. So they're going to rot, they're going to stink. It would be quite horrible.
And you thought morning breath was bad. But then things started to change.
By the 1850s, we have a revolutionary product that comes in. It's called Vulcanite, and it's a pink rubber. It came from America in the 1850s. It was cheap. It's much more easy for the dentist to make a set of dentures out of these. You would attach porcelain teeth that they've now got into that denture. It's cooked and it makes it hard, much more aesthetically pleasing. And a set of these is going to last you for your lifetime now.
So much so that people would give them as wedding presents. But who was the dentist in question? Were people still using their local blacksmith?
So the first qualification comes in the 1860s. So we see in 1860 the LDS, the licentiate in dental surgery. Obviously, as a result of that, these students have to learn somewhere. So they're the establishment of the dental hospitals and the dental hospital schools. So you're beginning to get the basis of a profession. You've got all this equipment that's coming in the Victorian period. All these manufacturers are starting to make the equipment that the profession needs. So that's really, really helping. You've got a much more scientific understanding coming on. So it really is a boom time for the dental profession.
We've got improved dentures, porcelain teeth, and finally the much loved dentist drill, was invented by a James Morrison in 1878 to prepare teeth for gold fillings.
You could achieve 2,000 rotations a minute. So dentists have a very strong right thigh of this generation.
Oh, yeah.
Shall we give it a go?
Yeah, let's give it a go. So, Rachel, is basically, there's a foot pump that spins this mechanic round, which goes up this massive rod and then is attached to a drill, which has a little mechanism at the bottom, which just spins round and round and round. And this is the drill that would eventually get into people's cavities, you know, look at what's going on there.
Yeah, so he saw his mother using a sewing machine and he said, I can use that for dentistry. I've certainly heard that in Guy's Hospital in the 1970s, when there were power cuts, if they were in the middle of treatment and there was no electricity, this piece of kit would come out of the cupboard so in order that they could finish it off, and you can control the drill speed, making it a pretty fine piece of kit, really.
But what about oral hygiene? Were people cleaning their teeth to almost prevent the need for these?
There's one idea that actually soldiers returning from the First World War brought back with them the toothbrush that they had been issued. Arguably, they hadn't used it to clean their teeth during the war. They used it to clean their boots. But nonetheless, it was a toothbrush. It begins at this idea of having a toothbrush in the family, that actually the idea of cleaning your teeth, it's beginning to take root. It's going to take a long time. But actually, you've got the founding of School Dental Society, you've got Children's Toothbrush Club, all things that are set up to try and enable people to buy a toothbrush, to bring it into this concept of the home and to clean your teeth once a day. We haven't got to twice a day yet, but once a day, it's a starting point. And actually the importance of oral hygiene, that you can do something yourself as a patient.
Oh gosh, it makes me so glad that dentistry has moved on since then. That was Rachel Bairstow from the British Dental Association.